RadioInfluence.com.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Bit on Radio Influence.
Guess what? It's the Babe Cast again. Jerry, by the way, I have to discuss that with you. But at some point, we'll do it. Yes, we're on Radio Influence, and we're on iTunes and all that kind of stuff. But I have to tell you, I've many things I have to tell you about, but we are so busy today. Brad Nessler's coming here. We are talking SEC football big time about who's around and who isn't around. And then someone that I've known since we were like kind of kids, if you want to know the truth. I've known her for a long time, and she writes, of course, for the Miami Herald, and Michelle Kaufman and I had a big conversation, because if you knew anything about the Hurricanes, about how ugly and horrible and wonderful I thought they were, of course, if you lived in the other side of the country, you thought they were the worst things in the world, but we do a whole lot with that, because they've got this, do they call it a chain that, and it's like 5.5 pounds is, you'd be leaning over. Well, when you find all of this, you're going to like that. So that's what we're going to do. And I have, you know, I got to tell you something. I'd like to watch TV. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you again why I like to watch TV. Brad Nessler, Michelle Kaufman, coming up on the Babe Cast. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, I said, you know, I was looking at things and I said, we got to find out, because we got to do a lot of SEC things that are going on in this thing. So we will talk about that. You know, I was going to ask you about some of the things that you have coming up. And I know I've got Kentucky and Georgia, but can we stop for a minute and find out what's going on with Tennessee and Florida? What do we hear? Somebody's going, somebody's not going. Nobody wants to find their guy, but I guess they don't really want to find their guy until after the season.
I guess. I mean, you know, I don't know why they fire him early if they don't want to get a head start, but
exactly.
Nobody they want probably wants to go anywhere until their season's over too, you know?
I guess they had talked to Willie Taggart, who was up in Oregon, but I can't see him going anywhere. He's really just there the first or second year there, but it seemed like that was going on, but I think they were looking for, what's his name, from Oregon. From Chip,
Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
But they have to do a background check on him, which I guess, you know, they've already done their due diligence. But the SEC has to look into it too, because he had some baggage when he went to the NFL. So the SEC's got to pass off on that, you know, whenever if he goes somewhere, if they offer him somewhere. So I guess that's the story on that thing.
Brad, I don't want to say anything, but don't we all have baggage at this point?
Oh my God! Are you kidding me? Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. If they had to do me,
I got stuff that goes back when I was 16. You know?
Exactly. That's how I feel. I'm like, he has baggage, and I'm like, well, I wouldn't want them looking at all my baggage still left around with that. I haven't seen any of that. Let me ask you: you're there. Alabama sits on top. Are they really the best team now? Especially because we can talk about everything that's changed. Because you know, when we do this, I don't usually see that much changing in the top five, and yet everybody is different, and Miami's different, and all these people, and Georgia's up last week, and Alabama's down, and then it flips around. The upsets that we've seen have been incredible.
I think the Alabama thing changed dramatically when they lost two more starting linebackers. You know, they lost two in the Florida State game in the opener that would have been starters. And then they, you know, get some new guys in there, and Sean Deion Hamilton and Mac Wilson, and you know, they play really well, and one of them's a Butkus semifinalist and all that kind of stuff. Then he gets hurt. I didn't even see Wilson leave the field. We did that game, and they said they carted him off. I'm like, what did we miss, you know? But once they lost those two guys, you know, you start running out of linebackers. I don't care how deep you are, if you're Alabama or whoever you are, you get down to where you had, you know, nine guys that can play, and now you're down to four or something, and it takes a big chunk. And I think that showed big time against Mississippi State, because, you know, they don't usually give up chunks of yards like that. And they were depleted at linebacker. And, you know, you looked out there and you said, I know that guy played the last time I did him, but I know he didn't play a lot. So, you know, that's what killed them. So are they the best? You know, they're undefeated, but so there, you know, there's a couple other ones that are too.
Yeah.
I thought at one time they were indestructible. You know, we had Alabama twice and Georgia twice at one point in the season. And the total points, cumulative points, was 190-14 in those four games we did between Georgia. Georgia played Vandy and Tennessee, or Tennessee and Florida, I guess it was, and Alabama played Vandy and Tennessee, whatever. And, I mean, it was, you know, they totally demolished him. And so you're looking at him, you go, well, who can beat these guys? So, you know, it changes week to week, injury to injury. You know, Auburn's kind of the hot team now, I think, just because I just saw them and I saw what they did to Georgia. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We got a lot of ball left, you know.
That's the way I look at it. We do have a lot of that. You know, Brad, one of the things, you have Georgia going to, I think you have Kentucky this weekend. You're going to do that, and then there's going to be a back-to-back because Mississippi State will take on Arkansas. But talk to me about Georgia. Georgia's coming through that thing going, I don't know how we weren't the best team last week, and now we aren't.
Yeah,
so how do they take that on, even going against Kentucky, which is usually a pushover game for a lot of people?
Kentucky's pretty, their defense is pretty salty, though, actually. I like their linebackers and stuff, and they're, you know, one of the better teams in the conference against the rush, so they're going to look at everything that Auburn did against Georgia's ground game and say, hey, why can't we do the same thing? First of all, they can't do the same thing because they don't have the same front four Auburn's got.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're good enough that they're going to try to make Jake Fromm beat them, and they couldn't do that last week. You know, they couldn't protect him. They had open receivers. Georgia, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They had a flea flicker that was wide open. They had another pass play that was wide open. And, you know, the freshman was in a – he was in a tough spot. You know, being at Auburn, there's 88,000 people. They're going crazy. It wasn't like Notre Dame because Georgia had 35,000, 40,000 people at Notre Dame. So everybody says he was in a hostile atmosphere. That was almost a home game for them. So, you know, different deal. But you know, Kentucky's decent. I mean, you know, they're 7-3. They lost two games they shouldn't have. They lost to Florida because they just forgot to cover a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And even in that game, they missed a, you know, field goal by about a yard. And they lost another game by three. They only got blown out once. So I think they're pretty decent. So I don't know. Georgia at home's a lot better, though. They should rebound, I would think.
And one of the things, South Carolina, I was, you know, I watched him go through Florida here, and then he goes to South Carolina. And I'm like, okay, you have to start over, but it didn't take him very long to start over the way it did here.
No, it didn't, you know, and he's done a really good job there, and I don't think he had much to work with when he got there, but, you know, they found a couple good receivers. They lost one good running back, but they found another one. I think Jake Bentley's – I think any time, you know, you have a quarterback that can play, and I mean like really play, you got a good chance, and that's the problem that – Tennessee had this year. That's a problem. Florida had. It's a problem Will had when he was at Florida. You know, and then he gets Jake Bentley at South Carolina. He goes, wow, this guy's pretty good. And then he sort of builds around him, and then he, you know, makes his defense. Some of those defenders that, you know, played really well for Georgia or Florida rather the last 2 years were Will's guys. So, I mean, you know, McElwain comes in there, and all of a sudden their defense is pretty darn good. Those are all his all Muschamps recruits. So, you know, sometimes it just takes a while, and you know, you don't get a while in this business anymore, that's for sure.
It's for sure about that. You know, I was looking at about things. I was just wondering about Will Muschamp and how well he's done. You mentioned the fact that they don't have a quarterback at Florida. And, you know, forever they've always had a quarterback.
Right.
But they can't seem to find one now.
Yeah.
They've got Franks, but it just, in the last couple of years, they haven't really gotten one that they think is the quarterback there.
Yeah, the closest thing they had was Will Grier, and they kind of ran him off, you know, when he had the performance-enhancing stuff or whatever, and they could have stuck by him and said, hey, you know, just go through this year. We'll bring you back next year. You'll be the starter.
Right.
You got 3 years here. And they just said, hey, we got Felipe Franks coming in, and he's supposed to be the next coming or whatever. So they kind of kicked Will out the door, and, you know, last time I looked, he was in the top 10 in touchdown passes, I think, in the country, West Virginia. So they, you know, they've lost some guys through just transferring. They've lost guys through, I don't know, misbehaving. I don't know what you want to call it. But, you know, they haven't had a guy they could count on since Tebow, and that's a long time ago.
That was a long time. The more I think about it, too, because I just happened to see something in Twitter, and he had written something, and I thought to myself, that was a long time ago. It doesn't seem that long, but it really does. Now, You're doing the Georgia at Kentucky, and there's also the Mississippi State at Arkansas thing. And Mississippi State almost knocked off Alabama the last time.
I think Mississippi State's really good. The only time they really flopped was, I don't know how Georgia did it, but Georgia beat them senseless, but that was in Athens. And really, ever since that game, you know, they've been better. And they're the 1, 2, 3. They're the fourth best team in the conference, I would say. And they probably have the third best coach. I think Dan Mullen does a really good job with what he's got to work with. And, you know, he develops quarterbacks really well, the kind of quarterbacks like a Tebow. I mean, the kid he's got there is probably more of a war horse on the ground than he is throwing the ball, but he can throw it a little bit too. you know, and Brett's got problems, you know, and then on top of it, the quarterback that he was playing got a DUI, and so he's suspended, so they're down to Austin Allen, and I don't know who's playing behind him. So, you know, they're short at the quarterback spot. They just haven't played nearly as well as they had hoped. He's on the hot seat, the whole deal. So it's going to be a tough one, I think, for Arkansas to be able to win.
Do you see anybody out there? Because, you know, we always like to see the quarterbacks, and yet, unless you're talking about the two guys out in the Pac-12, there's not a lot of people that we're thinking is going to be a number one quarterback. Now, the draft is a long way away, but
yeah.
I see those guys out there, and I look at, you know, USC and all that, but it's kind of like, I guess if I don't see them on this side of the Mississippi, I don't really think about it that much, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'd still take Baker Mayfield over all those guys that are going to be number one draft choices. And I know everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I see a little bit of Brett Favre in him. I see a little bit of Drew Brees in him. I'm probably dealing because of the size, I guess, but I don't think an inch makes a difference here when you're a player, man. He's a baller, and I love watching him play. And I think he'll be an NFL quarterback somewhere down the line. Mason Rudolph probably will be at Oklahoma State, although they keep putting out guys that put up huge numbers and then get to the league and really don't do a lot. So mm-hmm. That's system-oriented probably more than anything else. I mean, Sam, you know, the kid out of USC is probably the most prototypical guy to be a number one draft choice. But, you know, I've heard rumors that he wants to go back to USC just because he wants to avoid the Cleveland Browns. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, what a great story. Yeah, I think I'll come back to school for another year so I don't have to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, but what happens if it's Cleveland again? Because that's pretty good. It could happen again.
Yeah, I know. He's looking at that. Every time they lose another one, he's going, I don't want to go play there. And, you know, I don't know. I don't see, best quarterback. I don't even know the best quarterback I've seen this year.
Yeah.
The one that played the best was probably Stidham last week for Auburn. And he's just getting started. But he's got a pretty good arm. He's a pretty heady player. 2 years from now, he might be good. I don't know.
Brett, let me ask you, what happened to Florida State? I remember going into the season, I think they were in the top second or third or something like that, the top,
yeah,
you know, rankings. And it's just been horrifying for them. I mean, because you kind of expect it to be there, and we can talk about that in Miami and being differently. But what happened to Florida State over there?
You know, just they put so much on that quarterback's shoulders. And even last year, he was getting knocked around so bad that I didn't know if he was going to make it through last season. And then, I mean, it started right where it left off. They couldn't protect him against Alabama. And, I mean, he played his guts out, and I give the kid credit, but he was so beat up that once they lost him, they never in a million years expected they were going to have to go to the second guy there in that spot. And then I think it just sort of unraveled, and now I think, you know, having watched him, I didn't expect him to beat Clemson or anything, but I watched some of the game, and they just didn't look like their heart was in it. And I think they're starting to hear rumors about their coach and their coach against their administration. The kids hear all that stuff. And,
sure,
you know, coaches will say, I don't listen to the outside noise, and I don't read the paper, and I don't listen to the internet, and I don't watch TV. That's a bunch of baloney. You know, if they don't, their wife does. And if their wife doesn't, their kids hear it at school. And that all kind of starts rolling on them a little bit. And, I don't know. I don't think they'll recover real soon, actually. And especially if Jimbo leaves, it'll be two openings there. You know, if he goes, the rumors are Texas A&M and all that kind of stuff. But, boy, how about, would you ever think there'd be Florida and Florida State open the same year as a coach?
No, not at all. That's what's so shocking about it. And meanwhile, I believe the chains and everything are back in Miami. I don't know what's going on. I said, we have to talk about that. But they came back and they've got these gold chains and they're pulling that 90s thing again. And it's like those old guys again. And I kind of love this a little bit that's going on in Miami. It's kind of great because they've been down for a while.
I know. I love it, too. And I'll tell you why. Because I always loved Mark Richt when he was here in Georgia. And, you know, he wins 10 games a year for 15 years. And they kind of run him out of town. And he's classy enough to go to the news conference when they fired him with a big smile on his face. Just, you know, everybody thought maybe he's going to just go on a mission for a couple of years, and boom, Miami comes up. And now I watch him on TV, and he's got the permanent tan. You know, he's looking healthy as heck. He's got the goatee working, got a little swag to him instead of what he was doing here. Players are playing like the old Miami. It's fun to watch. And, you know, college football kind of needs Miami to be good. They need Texas to be good. They need Notre Dame to be good. You know, some of the teams that you just automatically went. I mean, they need Nebraska to be good. Just some of the old names, you know, that used to be always in the hunt or always in the Orange Bowl or always in the national championship picture. Kind of need that back. And so for Miami to get it back, I don't know how he did it so fast, but I know he got more done with facilities or is getting more done with facilities than he ever got done over here in Athens. So, I don't know. He's rolling, and I'm kind of reveling in watching it. It's kind of cool.
I got to tell you, I'm completely like that, too, because they've been down for so long, and now they're like, they're in the top five, and I'm just loving this. Brad, I really appreciate it. I know you're busy, but I do appreciate it. You've got the second game today. You've got the Georgia taking on Kentucky. That's what. Yeah, you've got that one that's going on, and there's one
another
before it,
too. Another cats and dogs sports, baby. It's just another cats and dogs game.
Well, that's what we love, though. We don't mind it. Brad, thanks an awful lot. I do appreciate it.
You got it, hon. See ya.
Did you miss me?
Of course we miss you. I haven't seen you. I don't even know the last time we saw you.
I know, but it's wonderful when we get to talk on the phone, isn't it?
It is. It's just like, time doesn't pass when we talk on the phone. You know, sound exactly the same.
And you do too, which is the scary thing, because now, I mean, how old is your daughter? Do I dare ask the question?
Well, she's going to turn 18 in February. She's a senior in high school. We've been going on college tours. She's applying. She's right now in the throes of college applications. So, yep, this is it. This is the last year with her, and she's gone.
Well, do you think she's going, or is she going to Miami? Is she going to go around the corner?
No, she's not even applying at any Florida school at all. No, she's applying at all over the place. We were at Northwestern over the weekend in Chicago. She's applying at Northwestern, Duke, Vanderbilt, Yale, Brown, Dartmouth, Penn, UVA, all over the place, but nothing in Florida.
How does your lovely husband feel about this now?
Deb, how does my lovely husband feel about this?
What does he think?
About Sophie going away. This is the babe.
It's me. Hi, honey.
It's the babe.
Hey, I want to know.
He'll be fine. He says he'll be fine. He's not sure about his wife.
Okay. Well, I could see that could probably happen. At one time, what do I say? Do I look at chains and rosaries, or what do we do? I don't know about you, but I'm so glad that stuff is back. And the fact that they're sitting up there way up at what, number two or whatever it is. And it's almost like, I was having a conversation today with my lame ass doesn't do anything producer that sits across from me. And I don't, why they're even here. I think it's just to get out of the house. But he said, the fact that Notre Dame and Miami are back is really good for the standings. It's really good. And I said, yeah, it is, because I love, and you must tell me about chains and rosaries. You have to tell me about that big Cuban thing with the U in the middle. I want to wear one of those. Tell me everything.
That is the hottest thing. Well, Miami is definitely back, and it's so much fun. I mean, I went to University of Miami from 83 to 87. So I was there in the Jimmy Johnson days, and Bernie Kosar, Vinny Testaverde, Jerome Brown, the Blades brothers, Michael Irvin, and that era where, everyone in Miami absolutely embraced and adored that team. It was just, there was so much personality on that team, and they had so much swagger, and they intimidated every team before the game even started. And the rest of the country hated them. The rest of the country views them as thugs, convicts, whatever you want to call it. And so that era ended, and the program kind of became irrelevant. I hate to say it, but for quite a long time, Miami was really not in the picture anymore nationally. It was not a big story. Florida and Florida State had more success. Miami was just kind of, floundering along. And all of a sudden, Mark Richt comes down here, and Manny Diaz, his defensive coordinator, both of them have Miami roots. Manny Diaz's father, Manny Diaz Sr., was the mayor of Miami.
Right,
so this is literally the mayor's son. And so he grew up down here, during that era. He remembers those days, the UM heyday. And then Mark Richt played for the Canes in the early 80s, just before they became a national power. But he played with Jim Kelly. He was Jim Kelly's backup. So the bottom line is Mark Richt and Manny Diaz are both Miami guys who know the culture. And the culture is, like it or love it, and people in Miami love it, and people elsewhere, I don't know. But the culture of University of Miami football that people down here love is about swagger. It's about flash. It's about end zone dancing.
Right.
It's about all that. That is what made Miami, Miami. They're entertainers. They're out there. The coaches, you know, Jimmy Johnson and Howard Schnellenberger, they let them be who they are. They didn't try to corral them. And I think in recent years, you know, the coaches and the programs were really trying to make them more like other teams around the country.
Right.
And it just doesn't work here. I mean, Miami's Miami. Look, I'm a native. I'm from here. We down here have a certain culture. It's a combination of the Latin, fun-loving, loud, flashy culture with the inner-city black culture of Miami. You put those two together, and you've got a hell of a party, okay,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of people with personality. Everybody's loud. Everybody dances. Everybody shows their emotions. And that is what this team and these particular coaches, Mark Richt and Manny Diaz, are embracing. And that is the reason, because these players were mostly recruited by Al Golden, okay? So
mm-hmm.
Al Golden recruited these guys, but they were not playing with the intensity and the swagger and the confidence that they're playing with now. And I think the difference is that they're being allowed to be who they are. And so Manny Diaz, who I said before was the mayor's son, mayor of Miami's
yeah.
son, he came up with the idea of the turnover chain. And he wanted to do something to some incentive for the defensive players to make a big play and to be recognized for those big plays. So he and the other coaches sat around and tried to think what to do. Mike Rumpf, who's a former Miami player, is on the staff now. Together, they came up with the idea of a big, fat chain, which is what, you know, people down here wear. I mean,
yeah.
I don't wear one, but a lot of the young people wear the big, thick chain.
It's a Cuban chain, right? Isn't that what it's called?
It's called the Cuban link. It's
yeah,
called the Cuban link. The biggest, fattest link that you can get on a gold chain is called the Cuban link. It is the gaudiest, most flamboyant chain that anybody can wear. And so I am Cuban. Dave wants me to stress that I'm Cuban.
Well,
I'm not
so
in any
tell
way
him I am too.
Down Cuban. Okay, I know you are too. So
right,
I am Juban. I'm actually Juban.
Cuban.
So I'm Cuban Jewish. So anyway, the Cuban culture down here, I'm telling you, it's about flash, it's about showy, it's about fun, it's about dancing and being loud. And so they went to a local jeweler who's also a Hispanic local guy who's been a Hurricane fan for 30 years and said, AJ, make us a chain. Make us a turnover chain. So he made this chain, which is 5.5 pounds. Picture this, putting a 5.5 pound chain over your neck. And then on the bottom of the big fat Cuban link chain is a huge medallion with 900 sapphire chips. 450 orange ones, 450 green in the shape of the U. And that chain is carried around in, this is also perfect, in Manny Diaz's humidor, okay,
yeah.
his cigar box. That he transformed his cigar box into a carrying case for the turnover chain. And the turnover chain is kept in a secret location all week because, as you know, at this point, people would try to steal it.
Yeah.
So it's in a secret place. On the weekends, during game day, it comes out, and there's one assistant coach is in charge of you know, being in charge of it, and he's the security guard for the chain. And whenever a player makes, you can't just make the, you can't just force the turnover. You have to come up with the ball. If you come up with the ball, you then race to the sideline. They're not taunting on the field. They're not doing things on the field, which they used to be, you know, criticized for before. Instead, now, when a guy makes a turnover, he comes sprinting over to the sideline, and his entire team surrounds him because the offense is getting ready to go on the field. The defense is celebrating. So the entire team surrounds this player. They put this gigantic chain over his head, and he dances around, and he gets to be the center of attention. And so for the last four games, this is definitely working. It seems hokey. It seems ridiculous. But it's working because the last four games, the Hurricanes have had four turnovers per game. Four turnovers per game. So four times a guy has run to the sideline in the last four games and had this whole production with the chain put over his head and all this stuff. And it has taken off like crazy all over Miami. Now there are t-shirts, official Adidas t-shirts and unofficial knockoff everywhere you look with the turnover chain, you know, painted on, like a big giant thing painted on. Or you can go to stores down here and buy an actual replica turnover chain. Some people are just making them at home out of beads, out of chains, out of whatever, but everyone is showing up at these games and with the turnover chain around their neck. So the Notre Dame game was, you know, a packed house, everybody wearing turnover chains or t-shirts with turnover chains. It was a humongous party for a million hours leading up to, you know, with College Game Day in Miami for the first time on the Miami campus, you know, the place went nuts.
Yeah.
And then the stadium was insane. And basically, it was just a 24-hour statement of saying, Miami is back. And not only is Miami football back, it is back with flash and with swagger and with turnover chains and with everything that the Miami haters will jump on. But it is exactly what makes Miami football so entertaining. And I really think it adds an element, and I've seen a lot of commentators say it this week, that when Miami is part of the national conversation, college football is better. It's just better because Miami's kind of a villain. Miami is the villain in college football. And you know, every good story needs a villain. And I think college football needs a team like Miami, because a lot of the teams are kind of the same. They're kind of cookie cutter. They're very good teams, but they they're not very different one from the other. Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, whatever. They're all great teams. But Miami has something about it that makes it different, and it's good for college football. And down here, it's just, they've completely taken over the town. The Dolphins are absolutely number two right now, especially the way they've been playing the last few games. But, you know, the Hurricanes have taken over. You're seeing the U everywhere. The little flags are flying. The turnover chains are everywhere. And it's really fun, especially for someone like me. I'm 52 years old. It's been a long time since Miami was ranked in the top five and talking about national championship possibilities and having people excited and all this stuff. It's been a really sensational season, and all the credit goes to Mark Richt and to Manny Diaz, because the two of them have brought back, they've taken Al Golden's players and transformed them into a national title contender.
You know, and one of the things too is, like you said, they're back there, and it, like you said, you talk about those guys with the Blades and people like that. And I, you know, I remember, I guess of all the things I remember, is when they got off the plane in camouflage for the Fiesta game.
Oh, yes.
I'll never forget that.
I know, that was obnoxious.
But
Jimmy Johnson was wearing camo.
You
remember.
Right.
I mean, Jimmy was all over it. Jimmy loved it, and Jimmy still loves it. He never apologized for it. Jimmy Johnson said, look, this is who these guys are. And I do want to say one thing. You know, a lot of people see all that. They see the swagger and the chains and the whatever, the gold grills on the teeth, whatever. And they think these are bad guys and they're thugs and they're convicts and they're criminals. They're actually not, okay? In fact, Miami last year, University of Miami football team finished second in the NCAA for community service hours behind some little school. I forget which one, but it's not like a big time program. University of Miami has gone out of its way to, you know, to recruit good guys, to get them involved in the community. They finished second last year in community service for the entire NCAA. The guys graduate. They're not anywhere near. I think the other day there was something posted online with the school, the football teams with the most arrests. Miami's not even on the list. Miami's not on the list, okay? I'm very proud to say, as a Miami alum, they may have that image of, yes, they're wearing gold chains and they're dancing and they're, you know, confident and cocky and all that stuff. They are good guys. They go to class. They do community service. They do not get arrested. It's just that image. People like to just paint everything, you know, with a broad brush and say, oh, they're a bunch of thugs. They're a bunch of whatever. No, they're not. They just love the game, and they show it in a different way. They show it by just by showing their emotions and dancing and wearing chains and all this stuff. They're actually good guys. They're good kids. They're very active in the local community. Mm-hmm. And I think the rest of the country doesn't really know or understand the program. People down here do, which is why people down here embrace it. And I think if if most people around the country would sit down and actually have a conversation with some of these guys, they would realize that these are, you know, they're good guys. They're good young men. They're like regular college students. They just, they have a lot of swag. They just do. They're from Miami and they're proud of the 305, and they all choose to stay here rather than go somewhere else because they love this community and they want to be near this community. And it's something really different. It's something really different that's hard to understand unless you're here.
You know, one of the things when you say that, one of the things that I thought about was when they came up and they were number two, I shot that to everybody in Seattle just to make sure, especially after Washington had already lost the game. I was couldn't send that to enough people in Seattle because, you know, they've I mean, 3 years after I left Seattle, they were still dogging me. The one time after Cortez and everybody had left, they were dogging me when they beat Miami. And I was like, well, that doesn't matter. Those guys are all gone. What about, is Luke involved in this? Do we have any of that kind of stuff?
Well, Luther Campbell is back. That's how you know that the program is back because, you know, Luke Campbell is back. He's back in the picture. In fact, when I was talking to Melvin Bratton the other day, he told me a very funny story. I wrote it. One of the previews I did before the Notre Dame game was about the rivalry in the 80s. And Melvin Bratton told me a hilarious story about when they played them back in the 80s and Tim Brown was on the team and he was a Heisman candidate. Sure. He was the hot stuff back then. Well, he used to wear a little towel. He wore a towel during the game, a navy blue towel, and it had his initials and his number embroidered in gold on that towel. And it was made for him by a teammate's girlfriend. She embroidered this special towel for Tim. Well, anyway, and Tim had been talking some trash before the game against Miami, calling the Miami guys thugs, whatever, whatever. Yeah. So the Miami guys got together with Luther Campbell, okay? And Luther Campbell basically made a bounty and said, you guys have to get me Tim Brown's towel. You guys have to steal Tim Brown's towel and bring it to me. And whoever does is getting a steak dinner. And that towel is going to be on a flagpole in the Martin Luther King parade in Liberty City. Okay, this could not be more Miami. Yes. This really could not be a more Miami story. You know, steal Tim Brown's towel so that the local, you know, rap star can put it in a parade, a Martin Luther King parade. And I said to Melvin Bratton, I said, you know, I don't think that Martin Luther King would approve of you guys stealing a towel from an opponent. And he said to me right away like this, he's like, oh yes, he would. If Martin Luther King were alive, he'd be a Hurricane fan.
Without a doubt.
So anyway, what they did was they on the first punt return or kickoff return that Tim Brown did, Melvin said, if you watch the tape of it, that 10 Hurricanes jump on him and they're grabbing at his pants and he's trying to hold up his pants and all these guys are grabbing at his waistband. And Bernard Clark, who I think is from Tampa,
I think
he's a Tampa native. Bernard Clark was a linebacker on that team. He grabbed the towel and he goes running around the field with the towel over his head, you know, and everybody's going crazy on the Hurricane bench. And Tim Brown went to the referee and complained, which, of course, the Miami players made fun of him for going to the ref and being a crybaby. And then Tim Brown ran across the field, was able to grab the towel back from Bernard Clark, and then ran it across to the Notre Dame sideline, gave it to an equipment manager, and they locked it up in a box, and he didn't wear it for the rest of the game. So that was just like one little tiny example of how the rivalry between the Hurricanes and Notre Dame was in the 80s. And so all of that came bubbling back up and exploded like a volcano on Saturday night. I mean, it was just an amazing thing to see these two rivals from so long ago who are finally relevant again. I mean, both programs really took a dip for a long time.
Yeah.
And to see Notre Dame and Miami, which are just, you know, whatever side you're on, it's definitely sort of the good guy, bad guy type of teams in college football. And here they are going at it again 30 years later, and Miami comes up big. And it's a really fun time for the Hurricane team and for the Hurricane fans down here.
You know, one of the things, Michelle, is they're going to play Virginia. They already knocked out Virginia. They're going to the championship game. They're going against Clemson, and I think that's in Greensboro or something. But, all right, so they knock off Virginia, and they knock off Pitt, and then they have to play Clemson. How good is Clemson? How good are the Hurricanes right now? I mean, we love what they've done, but are they serious to play against Clemson?
Yeah, I mean, that obviously is going to be the big test, because earlier in the year, a lot of people thought Miami was a fraud because they really did struggle against some not very good teams like North Carolina. And so, myself included, we're saying, okay, they're winning, but they're lucky. They're more lucky than good because they're winning these games by the skin of their teeth. The Virginia Tech game is where they really came to life. And I think, you know, that game followed by the Notre Dame game, they're playing on a whole different level now than they were at the beginning of the season. The Clemson game is going to have added meaning for them because Clemson beat them 58-0 2 years ago, which
wow.
was, you know, right after yeah. that is when Al Golden got fired. So 58-0 for them to go from being completely obliterated 58-0 by Clemson to now having a chance 2 years later to redeem themselves, you know, in a championship. It's Miami's first ACC football championship, which, you know, it's hard to believe. When Miami joined the ACC, the whole idea was, oh, this is going to be kind of an easy conference to win a conference championship other than FSU. You know, everyone just sort of thought Miami and FSU are going to dominate.
Right.
And here we are this many years later. Not only has Miami never won the ACC title, Miami's never even been in the championship game. Miami has been that irrelevant for this long that Miami has never even made the championship game. Meanwhile, its basketball team has won the
right.
ACC title. I mean, if you would have told me that the University of Miami basketball team would have a title, a championship conference title before the football team, I would have thought you were crazy. But that is what's happened. Miami basketball has actually won ACC championship. The football team hasn't. And so this is a huge, huge opportunity for Miami to, you know, to beat Clemson and rectify all of that. But Clemson, that's going to be a hell of a game. I mean, Clemson is a very, very good team. But, you know, Notre Dame is too. And I didn't, to be honest, perfectly, perfectly honest, I really did think Miami was an underdog against Notre Dame. I did not have great faith that they were going to win that game. The fact that it was here gave me some thought that maybe they could do it, but Clemson up there, it's not going to be a home game. It's going to be very, very difficult. But if they do that, I think they could go all the way. I mean, I really do. If they could knock off Clemson, then anything is possible with this group. It's going to be fun. Now they have to make sure they take care of business against Virginia and Pitt, because it's going to be hard to get that kind of motivation for these two games. You know, they're, I'm sure, thinking ahead to Clemson already and beyond. And they've got to really focus these next 2 weeks, because they struggled against some weak teams early in the season. And all it takes is a few mistakes, but the defense is just playing so strong. And Malik Rozier is, you know, getting better. He struggled a little bit early, but he seems to be getting better under pressure. And I don't know. I mean, it's fun. I don't know what's going to happen. All I can tell you is right now the U has completely taken over this city, and the combination of their success and the Dolphins' failures have just made it a hurricane town all over again. It's just like it was in the 80s. It's exactly like it was in the mid-80s.
But how wonderful.
I feel like I've gone back in time.
How wonderful is it to be back there again? And the fact that it's, you know, somebody was saying the other day, Miami and Notre Dame, we need that, you know, because if you remember when Lindsey Nelson used to do his game? Do you remember when you were little and you would see that on Sunday when they would do, Lindsey Nelson would do the games and he'd go further on down the review or further on down the, you know, they'd go 1-10,
yeah.
1-10, and he'd go further on down the, well, that's what we used to see on Sundays. But now we see so much of this, and I got to tell you, I love this. Did you wear the chain? Can I ever wear the chain? I want to wear the chain.
You can wear the chain. You can get a chain. The chains are available all over. You just need to come down here. You need to come visit Miami.
I know.
And there are many places you can get yourself a chain and wear that chain proudly.
And I would love doing that. I have to tell you, it's been I just love hearing it. I'm glad that they thought of something, and it's been, you know, really good again. I love that people see it and they're wearing it. I love it. And it goes, and I think when I lived in Seattle and I had all those people, they were the straight-laced people in the world, you know, in Seattle, they're all so quiet,
yes.
You know, and, yeah. And I was just telling Miami would, and I said, Miami will kill you. Oh no, we're going to the Rose Bowl. I said, Miami meet you in a parking lot and they'd kill you. You know, and
right.
So
well,
then,
they're laid back. You know, the Northwest is Pacific. It's the Pacific Northwest.
Right, exactly.
You know, everybody's laid back and, you know, they're all eating granola and wearing Birkenstock sandals. I mean, down here, they're wearing turnover chains and gold grills. You know, it's just a different, and the women are walking around in high heels and tight skirts and, you know, everybody's got the music blasting from their cars. Every party, everybody dances, you know, even my daughter's age, the kids dance and sing and play Latin music, whether they're Latin or not. It's just, there's a certain pulse. There's a certain pulse in the city of Miami that I'm from here. So I happen to love it. I'm also Cuban, but even if I wasn't, my husband's not, and he loves it. It's just something that you either love or hate. And the people down here who love it are really embracing this Miami team because this team sort of embodies everything that is Miami, everything that we love about ourselves and everything that everybody else hates about us is embodied in this team.
I love hearing this. I can always talk to you. You are the best. Tell everybody at your house I said hi. Maybe I will visit down.
I'd love to see you. We got, you know what? If you got to come down, spend a couple of days. You know, you got, well, you're Cuban. You got to come down here. Go to Versailles. Get yourself a bistec de palomilla, something.
All right. I will do that. I will do
all
that.
Right.
You, listen, I love you. You know that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Love you too, babe.
You know, that's a lot of fun when you talk to the guy that does all that SEC and all that Georgia stuff and how furious is Georgia going to be right now after being number one last week? They're going to be pretty furious in all of that. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I've always been the University of Miami. I've always been into it. I've always been the sleazy part, the bad guys, the enemy guys. That's what I always loved, and I still love it, and I love that they're doing that again. So I'm looking forward to it. I expect them to go up against Clemson. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm looking forward to all of that. You know, I got to tell you something. The other day, I'm invited to a restaurant, and it's through a friend of mine invites me, and they're having, like, I guess a 25th anniversary or something like that, and it's an Ethiopian restaurant. Okay, I'll go. So I go there, and it was pretty fabulous, I have to tell you, because it seemed like a lot of the people there were more Ethiopian than me, and they knew what was going on. So I was taken, and they have things that are really hot, and then I'd have to run back and get some lentils to be able to, like, kind of do, because I'm not really good with the hot thing. So I went through that, and then they had a guy who was playing, what shall I call it, Ethiopian music. Is that what I call it? Or he was doing the grind? I don't know what to call it. Well, anyway, he's doing it. And he's all dressed in white. And he's got a thing that he goes plink, 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 almost like a small harp. And then he flips it around and goes, meen, meen, meen. He's doing so. He's got this thing like this. And he goes plink, plink. And then he flips it around. He's got a bow that goes, da-da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, he's singing up a storm. And I'm watching this, and I actually had to suffer myself, and I bought a new iPhone. I forget this. I should have been like, I never bothered to get another one. Well, now I didn't know what was going on. Thank goodness I was somebody who was taking a picture of it, because I kept going, I don't get it. So somebody else was taking it. Well, they have this one woman in this big white thing going on, and she's got some lovely Afro thing going on, and she's got these balls like the size of a Rubik's cube, but there's like nine of them going around her neck, and she's a big busted woman like I am, and she is singing, and those balls are flying all over creation, and I'm just mesmerized by the whole damn thing. She's dancing around and she's coming over to the table and going bingity bing, and that the Rubik cubes are going all over her. And I was like, oh, this is kind of great. And they were singing stuff that you would have never heard of in your life. And it was really kind of good. I mean, I really enjoyed that. And so then we were leaving, and then somebody said, oh, let's go to such and such because so-and-so's band is there. And I, of course, like an asshole, because I'm driving, I go, okay. So first of all, you know, I live at the beach. So when you go there, you go to, I mean, you're going to a beach bar. It's obviously, most of the people there are not wearing shoes. Do you know what I mean? And you've got to wait in line to get in. And somehow I get right behind. And don't forget, this is all open. You know, it's tough done. What's that thing? A roof on the top, but it's all open and everybody is running around. So I'm sitting right behind the drummer. I'm leaning against the wall. I don't know what it is, but I'm watching this whole thing. And the band is very good. But, you know, I'm watching these people and we catch the last set. And these people are not 20 years old at all. These people are more like 60. But they do believe in the great times of the 70s. Well, there I was watching this. I swear to God, I'm watching this, and I see this one very skinny woman with her arms way up, and she's got this big pot belly going on. You know, I'm fat, but not, it's a different kind of fat because she's got this thing up to here. She has this big pot belly going on here. And I'm thinking, girlfriend, this is not for you. But she didn't care because they were all pretty drunk. And then the person next to me kept banging into the girl next to me. And they're, I mean, I don't know about you, but I sure don't look anywhere near their age. And I'm like, okay, so I went to see it. It was good that I went to see it. I thought they were really good, but the people around it were just falling down, and it was just very, this is why I watch television, because, you know, it's midnight, okay? I've had, like, cranberry juice, okay? So everybody else is smacked up on that thing, and I've got, this is why I don't go to bars and why I stay home and watch television. That's all there is to it. It's too bad that the World Series are over because I got nothing else to watch right now. Or do we have things to do? We have many things to do. But let me just tell you, if you love them a little, and I do love Miami, and they're just going to be out there. They're on ABC all week, by the way. I believe they're on ABC for the next three games because they've got Virginia and Pittsburgh, and then the last one is in Greensboro. Where is it? What did I decide? That's North Carolina A&T. I swear to God, I don't know how I found this out, but I did. That's what's in Greensboro. All right, we'll do more of this. Do we have to do this again next week? This is me. It is the fabulous Sports Babe.
If you know the Babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBabe. And subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been The Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence. Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.